Good morning. So, last time before the break, and probably a lot of forgetting things we covered in this class, we were talking about pipelining. And after introducing pipelining sort of generically, we talked about adding it to processors. So our steps were we divided our processor into stages, which our book had already done with the steps of an instruction execution. We made sure that values that cross stages went into pipeline registers, because previously we were, say, relying on the ALU to continue outputting the value it computed for the entire instruction. Now we're not going to do that anymore because we're going to have the ALU do something else. We need to put the value somewhere. We have this register we add to do that. And each stage has this general pattern where it reads from the previous, writes to the next, and does something with whatever things are contained within it. So like the memory stage manipulates the data memory, in addition to reading values, so like what memory address to use, and writing values out, like where to write the result and what the result is. And this gives us an instruction execution where we have, you know, one instruction in write back, the instruction after it in the program is in memory, ready to finish the cycle later, but we have shorter cycles now because we have pipeline. And the big thing with pipelining that we have to deal with is not, you know, making the pipeline work properly, but dealing with hazards. So if we just do our natural pipelining thing, setting up the registers, we find out that some things don't work anymore. And we had two kinds of hazards. So one are data hazards, where we find out something doesn't work anymore because we have the wrong value. And the reason this happened in the pipeline we showed earlier was that we wrote in cycle 5 of executing an instruction and read in cycle 2, which meant that the next instruction could try to read a value before it was written. We also had control hazards, where we wanted to, say, do a conditional jump, but we didn't know what the conditions were yet because the instruction that would actually compute those conditions hadn't completed running enough yet. And our solution to both of these problems was stalling, that we would stop executing new instructions and insert no ops, which wouldn't have any hazards. We can just keep executing ops however long we want. And this would be a solution that always works to solve these hazards. Just wait until we know where the conditional jump goes, or we wait until we have the right value in the register so we can read it at the normal time and it will work. So stalling is a thing we can certainly do. We have some extra cycles we spend on a lot of instructions. So for a ret, we have fetch it, we decode it, we execute it, we do its memory stage, and in its write back stage, we finally start fetching the next instruction. In a conditional jump with stalling, we fetch, we decode, we execute it, and the next in its memory stage, we finally start, you know, actually executing the next instruction, fetching it from memory. And for data dependencies, we also have a couple extra cycles we might have to wait. So this is with stalling, so it works. This is something we could do. But a question is going to be that this is awfully painful, that real programs have a reasonable number of conditional jumps and some returns and a lot of data dependencies. Like, we very frequently write assembly code where we like write to a register, like add to a register, add to it again, add to it again. And those are precisely the sort of worst case for those data hazards. So we'd really like to say, can we do a bit better? And we're going to look at that today. So before I talk about that, something we finished up with last time that I'd like to mention about why we don't have some more hazards than what I talked about there. So these are the stages we have finally. We have read from the instruction memory, do PC computation and fetch. We do register file reads and decode. We do computation and condition code operations and execute and so on. And our big reason for data hazards was that we have this disagreement here, that we read the register file at a different time than we write it. And our textbook made decisions to avoid doing that when possible. So for the register file operations, we really do need to read the register file and do things which take a long time. You need to access memory, and that's going to take a long time. It wouldn't make sense to do it in the same time. But for other operations, like condition code read and write, we're going to just choose to always do that in one stage. Then we don't have data hazards. If we're always reading for the instruction that gets to that stage in order, we don't worry about data hazards. And so that's why, you know, that's why we chose for conditional jumps to read and write condition codes in the execute stage. And this is a design choice where we could have tried reading them earlier, but then we'd have more of these hazards to deal with. So by choosing to have something always happen in one stage, we avoided them. We didn't do that for the register file because we just want to do too much after we read a value and then write it back. And this is the same issue we have with the memory stage, that when we do access memory, we're going to read and write in this single memory stage. We're not going to try to take a shortcut where we sometimes read in an earlier stage and sometimes write in a later one. And the big thing this helps us with is otherwise we have to worry about data hazards with the memory. What if we have a load instruction and a store instruction which access the same address? If we read and wrote memory for them at different times, even if we had a data memory which just could say read and write at the same time, so we didn't have to worry about like, how do I decide which address I'm reading and writing, then we'd have a problem. We need to add extra circuitry to do that. So some real processors do that, but we're avoiding some data hazards through our pipeline design, and therefore not having extra logic to deal with. Another notable thing I'd like to mention before we get there is that there's another thing we do in the stat, in the write-back stage, which is writing the stat register. So for halting, it's very important that we actually halt after we do everything before the halt. Notably, you could have a memory writing instruction before the halt, and you sure would like to see that value actually written. If we just halt it as soon as we figured out what the status was in the fetch stage, well, that value might never be written. So now we know we've avoided some hazards, but we still have these really bad data hazards. We're going to talk about, you know, some tricks we're going to use. So first I'm going to say, can we do better for return? So this is actually something we're not going to do. We might talk briefly about ways real processors make return go better, but we can't easily do this because it might be written in the previous instruction. So like, if we want to have a shortcut, we need to take some extra measures, and just in case, like, is a call followed by a return, or a store followed by a return. For our data dependencies, though, we're going to have this great trick, which is going to be our most important way of dealing with hazards, as far as performance goes. Now, correctness, for correctness, stalling just always works. And that's to use values that are waiting to get to the register file array. And the observation we're going to make is that if we look at this processor here, we have this value here, which is supposed to be 1700, because this first add adds 800 and 900 and gets 1700 into R9. Now, it hasn't happened yet the way we're executing it, but logically, that's what's going to be there. And in fact, we can tell that because when we look at our pipeline registers, we see, oh, there's 1700 there waiting to be written to R9. And you might notice that, well, this is organized by time, and this is telling us during cycle 3, when we have this wrong value we're storing in this pipeline register, if we look elsewhere in our processor, we actually have a wire and a register with the correct value. It's already there, we computed it, we just need to know that that's the value we want to use, not whatever the register file had. So this idea is called forwarding. We're going to take a value from a different part of the pipeline, from a future instruction, and rather than waiting for it to be written where it would naturally go in the register file, typically, we're going to send it directly to where it needs to be. And you know, we're saying that at this point in time in the instruction, the input to these registers has the wrong R9. It has the 900 we read for the second instruction. That should have been 1700 and 800. And meanwhile, we have the right 1700 right here. And so what we're going to do is we're going to add a new wire. We're just gonna say, we're gonna connect those two wires, you know, sometimes, so we can actually send the right value. Now, we don't want to always do this because, well, let's say the second add instruction wrote to R10 as its destination, then clearly this would be wrong to do. So that means it's gonna be conditionally, sometimes we're gonna want the value from this wire, sometimes we're gonna want the value that comes from the register file. And whenever we have a choice to make in our circuit, we add a mux. So we're gonna put a mux there. So now we have a mux, and now we can use that mux to just directly send the value we want. We're just gonna send the right control signal to tell the mux that in this case, I've detected that these two instructions have a data hazard and that you can fix that data hazard by sending this value instead of reading from the register file and just and not worry about stuff. We're gonna have some control logic which detects that, and then we're gonna send the right value and we're gonna keep executing. So note that this can happen not just with RA. So in this case, in the first case, this was our problem. We had R9, which was written by the first instruction and read as the source A of the second instruction. We can also have the case where R9 is written by the first instruction and say read by the source B. So we have these two value register values. Both of them could be things we want to forward. So we're actually going to implement multiple extra wires. We're going to have a whole lot of extra wires. And in fact, if you look at our textbook, they have a diagram where they roughly have like basically every single wire in the processor going into this box. They call like, you know, forward something or other, which is really ugly. And if you try to draw all the forwarding paths, it gets really ugly. So there's lots of extra paths, but it's all this idea that we just look, where is the value that's going to be written to that register now? I want to send it to replace the read. Yes?
Is there a condition code that determines whether there's a data dependency?
So the question is, how are we going to detect that we need to do this? So we'll get to that in a second. Okay. So in this case, we have a forwarding condition where we send for instruction B. We want to read source A, R10 normally, and we want to forward for source B. And so you observed correctly that I didn't show you all the control logic which does this. And you know, that's not a trivial decision. So how are we going to detect whether we do that? So let's talk about what the conditions are to determine whether we want to do this forward. And we have to make this decision based on signals we have around. So we're going to write a mux, say an HCL, and we're going to do something with signals we have. And what we're going to be looking at is register numbers. So part of the thing we're going to do to enable this control is we need to know, well, what are the register numbers involved? And we're going to look at those register numbers and make our decision. So we're going to have some condition, and sometimes we're going to give eval E. So I'm going to write the names because you probably, you know, don't quite remember how our naming convention works. So if you remember, this is the EW pipeline registers. So this means that this is E_valE. So that's the value we forward. So that's why in HCL, my first mux condition is sometimes I send EvalE instead of reg output A. Because reg output A is this signal coming out of the register file. And we have various things we can use to control that. So one of them is E-D here. Another is W-D. And that's the number of the register that is eventually going to be written to. That's going to become the register file's D in the write-back stage. We also have some other signals I'm not showing you. So I'm saying that hypothetically, we have a WRA. So we take this source A and we have an RA register, pipeline register, and another RA pipeline register. And the reason we do that is like when we need the I code to determine, well, what do we do in, you know, memory stage, for example, do we read or write? we might need the register numbers to handle this forwarding. So we'll just send them forward if we need them. And so that's what I mean when I write WRA there, is I mean we say we pass RA all the way from fetch to the write back stage and pipeline registers, like we passed the iCode before to determine like whether you want to read or write memory. And the other parts of the naming convention, so this is edesd, this is d underscore desd, and therefore d underscore ra, and so on. So given that, figure out which of these you think is the right thing for value for the condition. And check with your neighbor to see if you agree with their assessment. Okay, who needs more time? No one's volunteering to need more time. Okay, so who thinks it's probably A? B? C? D? And E? Okay, so there's a split between B and C. So anyone want to volunteer to defend one of those answers? Okay, so I believe the correct answer is C. So the way I like thinking about it is that we have a pair of values. So we have, together, we have eval-e, which is a value we're going to write to edesd. We also have, after this pipeline register here, wval-e, which is a value we're going to write to wdesd. So in fact, we are going to need forwarding that involves wdesd, but that's going to involve use wval-e. For this case here, where we're writing eval-e, this value before the register from here, the register number that tells us what that value is EDESD. And what we're saying is EvalE is a value, EvalE is the register that's going to be written to the same as the one we just read. And we care about the one we just read because what we're doing is we're replacing the value we would have just read. So the reason why you think it's WDSD is because you'd observe correctly that sometimes we're going to actually have to deal with what if there were an instruction in between here? What if I had, you know, another add instruction here? I would still need to do that, and that's another case we'll handle, but that's not the case that's listed in this MUX. But you're observing correctly that this MUX here is not complete. So any questions on this? We'll talk a bit more about other cases where we need to forward in a second. Yes, and I guess, and
W.
Right. And for WRA, I guess I should say something about that. So if you thought it was WRA, that's we're saying that's the register that's being written later versus the, you know, that's not even a register that's being written. I'm going to compare, check. And for little DRB, this is just too early. We're comparing two things from the same instruction. We're comparing register B that we're reading now and the register A that we're reading now. Okay. So talked about multiple forwarding paths. So let's go through this example and let's figure out where we want to or need to do forwarding. And I'm going to assume that we can figure out how to execute this without stalling, which is why I've written things out like this. Obviously, if there was stalling, it wouldn't be right for me to say, we say fetch, to have this F representing fetch, saying we fetch in cycle 0, then 1, 2, 3, 4, without having any inserted nops anywhere. So for figuring this out, you know, we want to look at when we write a value to a register, where do we read it? And those are potential hazards. So they're called dependencies. And sometimes they're hazards. So we have these cases where you read registers after you write them. And those might be hazards. And we can see more examples of them. So here I have R11. Probably should switch to a different color because this is R11. And note that that's a read of R11 because we compute an address from it. And we also have R10. So to figure out what happens, I like saying, well, we have this dependency. Let's draw a line from to where we're going to need the value. And generally, what we're going to do with forwarding is we're going to need the value right after we read it from the register file. And this is because usually we're going to use it in the execute stage. So if we can't get it in time, forwarding is not going to work. But in this case, we can. If we want the value in time for the execute stage, we need to get it from the end of adds execute. And that's in fact what I showed you earlier. We take the value that's going to go into the execute, in this case, to memory pipeline registers, and we have that shortcut to send it back to replace the value we just read from the register file. So that's the case I just showed you on the previous slide, this time with a 5-stage instead of 4-stage pipeline. But we just after we compute the value from the ALU, we send it to not just the normal pipeline registers, but we also send it backwards to the previous instructions pipeline registers to replace the value that was just read. So we also have this usage of R9, and this one's a bit subtle. So you might say, oh, it's in write back and decode. So we're writing the value and reading it, so that should be fine. But you have to remember that write back means that if we don't do anything, the value is written here, and decode reads the value here. So we have a problem if we don't do anything. So we're going to, in fact, need to forward in that case. And that's the forwarding case, which involves checking big W-D. We're going to look at that and say, okay, the value you're about to write, you know, that's all you're doing in this stage, that's the one I should have read, but it won't be the one I read because the write hasn't finished yet. It won't finish till the end of the cycle. We're just a little too soon. And finally, we have our dependency from R9 to the XOR, and that one, in fact, is fine because the value is written here and the XOR reads it here. There's no problem, there's no hazard. There's a dependency, but it turns out if we look at what our pipeline naturally does, everything works. That we actually read the correct value. So then we have R11 here. So R11, we have a subtract, and this is another example of our first kind of forwarding case. We have a subtract, and then we have an mremove Q. It needs the address, it needs the value to compute an address. So it's going to need it by in time for execute, and we can in fact get it there in time for execute by sending it to the end of its decode stage, replacing a register read. Then we have our second memory instruction, which also needs R11 to compute an address. And in this case, we can get it in time. We can get it to replace this register read, but we're going to get it from the memory stage. So note that means that we're kind of doing something in the memory stage, even though that subtract instruction doesn't do anything in the memory stage, like from a high-level point of view. There's no computation there, but we still need to have the values going through wires and sometimes send that value from the memory stage that we're just passing from one pipeline register to the other to another instruction. So finally, we have this R10. So this is one of the, you know, stranger cases to deal with, because here we're reading a value from memory. In this case, we need the value in time for execute, so we're actually okay. We're going to have the value computed by the end of the memory stage, and now we're just going to send it to replace a value we just read from a register. Note that if we needed it earlier, we'd be in trouble, because you can't forward a value you read from memory before you read it from memory. So a key thing to note that these are all forwarding paths that work this way is that all my lines go slightly forward. They don't cross a cycle boundary, but they're all happening within a cycle. We can't forward between cycles because, well, you know, we need to put something in a register to pass it from one cycle to the other. And we can't go backwards in time. And these all obey that rule. And that's how I figure out whether forwarding works. If I have to draw a line that goes backwards, if I need to say get a value from memory and put it into code later, earlier on, I'm in trouble. I can't physically do that. And if I need a value to go forwards, that's not the right place to forwards cross a cycle boundary. That's not the right place to forward from. There's some later register I'm going to get the value from. Because I can't, if I connect a wire, it's going to send the value instantaneously. It's not going to delay it because I know I needed a cycle later. If I want to delay, I need to add registers. And we already have registers to hold these values, so we're not going to add registers just for forwarding besides like register numbers to compute whether we need to forward or not. So, any questions about this? You reason about whether forwarding happens, where it comes from, as far as what stage we're forwarding from to. Yeah?
For the example where it's computed in memory, like if the RN moves through there, would it just have to stall once, like in addition to forwarding?
Yes. So for the example going R10 going from mremove Q to XOR, if we didn't have the rmove Q, so we were trying to decode before we did memory, that wouldn't work. We need to stall to fix the problem. Okay, and finally. Okay, so another thing to note about forwarding is that often we have multiple candidates for forwarding. So here, you might say, okay, we have an add instruction that adds into R8, and later on, we have an add instruction that reads from R8, and while that's reading its registers, we can notice, oh, we have the register value for R8 in some future pipeline stage. We can forward it. And yes, you could. That is a value of R8. And you can send it from the memory stage of the first ad to the decode stage of the last ad, replacing the register read. But that's wrong. Because what you really want to do is you want to take the value of R8 from the previous ad, the more recent one. So this is something you have to deal with in forwarding, is that you're going to have multiple choices for the value of R8. You need to choose the right one. The right one is the one which comes from the instruction you started most recently. Or so you start, you finished, you would finish soonest. Yeah. You know, the most up-to-date version. So in that case, the most updated version is the previous instruction, not the one two before. So this is why our muxes work the way they do. So if you don't remember our mux syntax in HCL, it has the conditions in order. And this is partly to make this easier to implement. So our general pattern when doing it is that we'll deliberately choose the order we do our comparisons. We'll like check, do I want to forward from execute? Then I'll check, do I want to forward from memory? And we do it deliberately in this order to handle this case correctly. And if you do it in the other order, when you happen to have instructions that look like this, you'll get the wrong answer. This sort of issue is one reason why people in this class, when we do our pipeline processor, often have a lot more trouble with it. Because you can imagine that if you get this wrong, that if you're actually forwarding the red path, that it's really tricky to debug. Like, it only occurs on very particular programs. Like, often it won't happen at all, even for a pretty complex program. And, you know, you can look at, like, and if you look at individual instructions, it might kind of seem like everything's going right. Especially if you don't, like, recognize by hand which forwarding you're supposed to do. If you just, like, go through the instructions, say, yeah, we're reading a register value. Yeah, that's a value of that register, and so on. But this is the sort of pattern we use, and this is why our HCL syntax probably does this thing where we evaluate the case expressions as if in order. Because it makes this much more convenient. Otherwise, our reg source, you know, if we needed to have them be evaluated simultaneously, we need to like have some condition which is reg source A equals M dest D and it's not E dest D. You know, something like that. We don't need to do that. That's very convenient. But in hardware, we obviously need to have circuitry which chooses one value for the mux and doesn't actually execute sequentially. Okay. So that's one form of cases where we do multiple forwarding paths. Another is that we can have to forward values for source A and source B at the same time. Our instructions read two registers. It could be that both those values haven't been written yet, but are available in the pipeline. So this isn't really a special case to handle, but it means that you're going to have these forwarding muxes for every single register value you read, and they're going to all have to handle all the cases where you need to forward a value. So any questions about either of these cases where we need to forward multiple values? Okay. So I talked briefly about the issue of dependencies versus hazards. So we're dealing with data hazards where we need to do something in order to make the right thing happens. And there's a more general concept of a dependency, which we'll often talk about, that two instructions depend on each other, and that means that one needs the results of the other in some way. So the hazard is when we have a dependency and it happens that the dependency actually matters with our particular pipeline design. So note that dependency doesn't depend on CPU. We can talk about dependencies and think about our single cycle processor, which, you know, we can talk about what instructions depend on each other, what for what instructions doesn't matter what the other instruction does. But hazards are for a particular CPU. So for example, our single cycle processor has no hazards. If we just do nothing, it executes all the instructions correctly. We didn't do anything special to like compare register numbers and see if something would go wrong. We just, you know, implemented it and it works the natural way without special effort. So hazards are a statement about, given a particular pipeline, do we need to do extra work to solve the problem? And that extra work could be stalling or forwarding or a technique we'll talk about later called branch prediction or anything else that's something special we do for instructions with dependencies to make them work correctly. But the idea of a hazard is that it didn't work correctly before we did that special thing. So, that in mind, so here's some instructions. And you know how our pipeline works. We know we have our fetch, decode, execute, memory, write back stages. So given that, in this, find where are the dependencies and which of them are hazards. And of those hazards, which of them can we actually fix with forwarding? And I would recommend paper, but if you don't want to do that, that's fine. I think it is awfully hard to keep track of what's where without paper.
Or actually
Okay, who needs more time? A couple people? Okay. Okay, any more time still? Okay, so for dependencies, we're looking for, do we write a register and then read that same value later? So I'll go with the first dependencies from our first instruction. So I'll systematically say, addQ writes RBX, where is that value read? Not read here, not read here, not read here, it is read here. So that's a dependency. Then I want to ask, is that a hazard? You are shaking your head, and the way you figure this out is you say, well, if I do nothing, what stage are we in when this value gets written here, and if I look at the same timeline, it gets written before we do the decode stage of that add queue at the end. So when the add queue reads in the decode stage, everything's fine, we wrote the correct value. So it's not a hazard, it's just a dependency. So then I can keep going. I can say, okay, so let's look at this subtract instruction. It writes RCX. Where do I use that value? And the answer is, I don't. You might say, wait a moment, I remove Q has RCX in it, but it doesn't read it. It doesn't care what RCX was, so it's not a dependency. And because I remove Q overwrites RCX, this add instruction after it doesn't care what the subtract wrote into RCX. Doesn't change anything, there's not a dependency. So the subtract instruction here writes into RCX, then that value is overwritten. So it doesn't matter what the subtract instruction wrote into RCX. Nothing cares about that value. So there's no data dependency from RCX to the future instructions. But this value I remove Q writes into RCX, yes, the add following has a dependency on the I remove Q. It needs that 100 from I remove Q to do the right thing. And if we look at our timeline, we'll find out, well, I remove Q hasn't written the value yet. We say it writes it over here, we're reading it here, that's way too late. So we're going to need forwarding to resolve that. We're going to need to send a value from iRemoveQ's execute stage, where logically it doesn't do anything, but the value's there. There's some wire passing it from one pipeline register to another. And we're going to take that value and use it to replace the read. So we have 100 instead of whatever was in RCX before. So then finally, we have R10. This add writes R10, and the following add reads and writes it. So it needs to have the correct value to read, and that's going to require forwarding, because again, we look at when the value is written. That's way too late compared to when it reads our text. So any questions on this? How do you figure this out? Okay. So here's another example, and let's assume for this example that I'm showing where the food label is and that that's in fact where the junk goes, but it's not the literal next instruction. So, who needs more time? A few people? Okay. Oh. Bye. Okay, who still needs more time? So I'm going to go over this more briefly unless there are questions. Okay, so again, so for data hazards, for data dependencies, our pattern is we look at what value is written, see where it's read. So we have RBX, it's read by this following add queue. So that's a hazard. And this hazard, in fact, is not forwardable without stalling. So we're gonna do fetch, decode, execute memory, then we're gonna have the value and when to send it. But if we just did the natural thing for our add, well, whoops, it's too late. So we need to do stalling, and in fact, when we implement this in our processor, we're gonna do stalling and forwarding. So we're gonna wait a cycle. So we're gonna do a fetch, we're gonna wait a cycle, then fetch, decode, execute, and forward to there. Forward to the end of that decode, delayed decode stage. But forwarding enough is not enough to solve this problem. And this is the one data hazard we have left over after we implement forwarding. Does that make sense? So because we don't have the value of RBX until the end of the memory stage, we can't forward in time. It's not ready in time for the add to actually do the ALU operation. So then we have this jump not equals, and that depends on the condition code set by the add to know where to go next. So that's a control hazard, and we'll talk later about how we're gonna deal with those better, but sometimes we're gonna have to wait for that. Assuming we didn't have to wait, then this RCX here, well, that would have only not been enough cycles for it to actually have written out the value, so we're gonna have to forward that. It's gonna be soon enough because we'll have it in time for the execute stage of the second add, because it's computed after the execute of the first add, which is plenty early. And then we have this RDX here that we need to use to compute an address. So we need that in time for the execute stage of the mRemove queue. Even though we conceptually aren't doing anything with it in the execute stage, we're gonna need it in time for that because we're gonna add zero, because we're not like implementing the special case of doing something different for the instructions where there's zero there. We also have RCX being sent from this add to the mRMoveQ, maybe, but no, because this is written only. So that's not a dependency. Like the mRMoveQ, we only write to that value, we don't read it. Which is just an easy thing to miss. So any questions about these dependencies? Yes. So we actually, I was being imprecise here. We send it to the end of decode, like so. Because remember that we can't forward a value between two state cycles. So either we're gonna, so typically what you're gonna implement is you're gonna forward it from the end of memory to the end of decode. You could technically, it would be completely correct to forward it from write back to execute, from the beginning of write back to the beginning of execute. Instead of adding the wire just before the pipeline register, you add it just after. So our textbook does it just before, and my pictures and the slides do it just before. But as long as you're consistent, either works for implementing forwarding. But the shortcut needs to not cross cycle boundaries. That is a good question because people get confused about that later on, definitely. Okay, so that's examples of dealing with dependencies and hazards. Note that the hazards we have depend on our pipeline, as I said. So for example, if we had a four-stage pipeline, let's say executing memory were one thing, then this sequence here, which is a data hazard with our five-stage pipeline, wouldn't be anymore, just because we finish up write back earlier relative to decode. So this is, you know, something which depends on our pipeline design, and by adding more pipeline stages or removing pipeline stages, we change what hazards we have, and this substantially affects how good our processor is at executing real programs. And this means that it's harder than just looking at what cycle time do we have to figure out how good is a processor design. Because it affects, you know, not how much stalling we have to do even with forwarding. And also how much forwarding logic we have to implement, which is presumably going to have some cost in building our processor. So with that in mind, you should be able to figure out the same logic for, you know, where we need to do forwarding and stalling if we have a different processor design. So here I'm saying we split our execute stage in two. We have a very slow ALU, so we divide it in half. What's going to happen? Where are we going to do forwarding in that case? And where are we going to need to stall that maybe we didn't before? And can check with your neighbor. I recommend writing things down for this, but you don't have to. Okay, who needs more time? No one's volunteering if they need more time. Okay, so I'll start by explaining this. So the way I go through this is I first lay out what happens and go step by step. So naturally, what we want to do is we want to just execute fetch one after the other. And then we look at, well, I need the value of R9 just in time for the first execute stage. So I'm going to say, I'm going to send that value just in time from where it's computed. And I'm going to look here and I'm going to say, oh, that's in the middle of that's at the end of XQ1. That's not in time for me to have that actual result. It's not computed yet. I can't use it. I'm in trouble. And so that means I need to stall and shift everything over. All the later instructions. So that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to have one cycle of stalling. Everything moves because we stalled. We have stalled the second add. That means the third add needs to start later. That means the RM move queue definitely needs to start later. And then we can forward to have our correct value just after it's computed in the second execute stage in time for it to be available for the second add's first execute stage. Because our assumption is that we can't get the value to the last execute stage, and presumably we have two execute stages for a reason, so we better have it for the first one. We can't just, you know, only have the value for the last half of the addition. Okay. So that's R9. So then I can look at this second add instruction, and it uses RBX as its destination, and that's read by the RM move queue. And so we're going to say we want to have that RBX in time to compute the address So we're gonna have it replace the register read again. So we're gonna do this forwarding path. We also can look at R9 here, which I forgot the second case for that. So for R9 here, we need to read it in time for the first execute stage of the third add, and that's another forwarding operation. So it's not written to the register yet, so the decode stage won't naturally read it in time, even though it's stalled by one cycle. So we still need to forward it. So in both these cases, we stalled the instruction partly because of the dependency involved, but that wasn't enough. So we still do forwarding in addition to stalling. And then we have RBX. Here we need to send it from the end of the second execute stage in time to computer address, so before the first stage. And we certainly don't want to rely on the value we read from the decode stage because that won't be the right value. The register file doesn't have the right thing. And the same thing is going to be true of R9 here. So we need the right value of R9, the one we just computed by adding. And the value we read from the memory, from the register file, is wrong. Like, it's the value of R9 from before this first add, even. It's very old. So you want to replace that with the one from this last add. And the natural inclination, what we've done before, is we always send it to just replace immediately after the register read. And that would be an option. And if we did that, we'd have to have a bunch of cycles of stalling, and we do FDDDE1E2MW. We'd stall this arm of Q instruction a bunch of extra cycles. But we can be clever and notice that, wait a moment, we don't actually use that value till the memory stage and forward it later. So when you implement your processor, we will not, in fact, require you to do this clever forwarding where you do anything but replace the value just from a register. But real processors that have longer pipelines do this because, well, we just saved two cycles of stalling, and it's pretty common to compute a value and then write it into memory. You want to make that actually efficient. So any questions about this? So that's what we're going to say about forwarding for today. So I'm going to go on to our next topic, which is about how we're going to deal with conditional jumps. And our trick is going to be guess and check. We're going to guess what a conditional jump will do and check the result later. And the reason we can get away with this is if we look at carefully when instructions actually do things, we have some leeway where it's very easy to check for something and fix it if we were wrong. In particular, if we think about the fetch stage, what if we fetch the wrong instruction? How do we fix that? Well, nothing got updated but pipeline registers. So we just fix the pipeline registers in the PC, we've undone the fetch. So as long as we don't pass the wrong iCode on and we fetch the right PC later on, we've undone the fetch. In decode, we've read a few registers, but as long as we just get rid of those values we read and don't pass the iCode on, we've undone that decoding of the instruction. We didn't actually do anything which changes things other instructions will notice in those stages. In execute, we start getting into a little bit of trouble, because we might change the condition codes. And in memory, we get into a lot of trouble because we've written to memory, and if we want to undo that, we need to have a copy of the old value for memory somewhere and store it. That's really hard. But as long as we can figure out that we started executing the wrong instruction in these stages, it's fairly easy to fix. And that's what we're going to take advantage of. We're going to, on a conditional jump, we're going to start executing something. We're going to do something. We're not going to wait. We're going to do something. And we're going to figure out, before too much changes, if that was wrong. And if we can figure it out before we write any condition codes, all we need to fix is what's in the pipeline registers. So as long as we know we're in fetch and decode, we just change what's in the pipeline register. So we have some mux which puts in a different value into the pipeline registers, like a bubble, like a nop. to replace those instructions, and we've gotten rid of it. We've done our checking part of our guess and check. So we guess that we're going to execute some instructions. If we end up being wrong, we just get rid of them from the pipeline registers in time for nothing to be written to memory or registers. And so the sort of speculation we'll make is we have some code like this, and our guess, our speculation, is that the JNE is going to go to the label. And if we're right, we'll be 2 cycles faster. And if we're wrong, well, we had some extra logic to not complete that add and R and move Q instruction, to make sure the add instruction doesn't actually write to R9, to make sure the R and move Q instruction doesn't actually update memory. We had some extra logic to do that, but as long as that logic is there, you know, we're just as fast as we were when we were stalling. We've replaced our 2 cycles of stalling with 2 cycles of executing something else. That doesn't matter. That doesn't end up changing anything. Which is basically the same as stalling. We just weren't doing nops. So what ideally this looks like is we have our subtract, we do our JNE, and then we just start running the add queue, even though we don't know whether it's right yet. We start running the R move queue in the next cycle while we're decoding the add queue. Then we actually figure out what the jump is supposed to do. And then we fetch the correct thing. So in this case, we were right. So what we do is we just keep going. We fetch IR move queue as if nothing happened. So we're doing less work than we were before. Previously, we had this logic to figure out both stalling and like fetching the right instruction when we're done stalling. Now in the case where we speculate right, we go to where the jump goes and do nothing later. We're just not doing anything when we figure out that we were right. And we just know that, well, this R move Q I started fetching, now that I'm decoding it, I know it's right, it's fine. We're just gonna keep going as if nothing happened. So this is the ideal case. So we have these places where previously we were stalling. Previously, when we set the stall, these were just nops. So we're doing more work, and we're at, you know, executing our program faster. And if we're wrong, we're going to have those spaces there, which were previously waiting, but we're just we're going to correct our guesses. So we're going to squash our wrong guesses. So this is the extra work we're doing. Instead of letting the add queue go from decode to execute, we're going to have some mocks, which is going to say, sometimes I take the actual thing you just decoded, sometimes I'm going to put a knob there. And that's called squashing. We're getting rid of hiding the wrong guesses. And we're going to do that by just modifying the pipeline registers so to make sure that our, you know, that we don't end up actually writing to R9 in the case where we're supposed to execute this XOR. Yes?
Where do you store the memory address of the XOR so if you know where to jump back to?
The question is, where do you store the memory address of the XOR? So that's a good question and something which often puzzles people when they have to implement this. You probably want it in a pipeline register. So the usual thing to do is that in addition to passing like the I code for the jump, we'll pass the address of the instruction after the jump as a pipeline register. And at the same time we use ZF, we'll have along with, you know, the values to tell what to fetch here, we'll have the value of where you would go if we found out the jump was wrong. So we're going to have to store that in the pipeline register where previously we had no reason to keep that around. But yes, that is an important detail we will need to take care of. So after we squash the wrong guesses, we use our information to fetch the right instruction. So we're going to have some logic where we say, instead of using that value that we would normally put in the PC from R move Q plus address plus 10, we're going to take this value from later on in the pipeline that I remembered in a pipeline register for the jump that tells me where to go. So we're going to have going along the pipeline with the jump is where do you go if my prediction is wrong? Then when we figure out if the prediction is wrong, we send that value back to the fetch stage. So, questions about this? Fusion? Pretty sure I have not explained this adequately. But I guess we'll find out later. So this is branch prediction. And this policy of just assuming it's always taken is the one we're going to use for our processor. It's the one our textbook uses. It's not the best way of doing branch prediction, but it's certainly easy to implement. So we'll always treat a JNE in the fetch stage like it was an unconditional jump. And later on, we'll fix it in its executed memory stage if it was wrong. And this can give us a pretty substantial performance advantage. So if we think about, for example, here's a hypothetical instruction mix where we have pretty few jumps. 8% of our program is conditional jumps. That's pretty low, especially if you think about loops. You probably have a lot of those, as like relative to your instructions. But if we compute based on how long they take with prediction or without, we find out that basically this, with branch prediction, we're like 10%-ish faster. And this is with, a not very deep pipeline. These effects get a bit better as you have more pipeline stages, which real processors often do. They often have like 8 or 10. So any questions about branch prediction? So next time we'll talk a little bit about help in HCL to implement branch prediction. As a preliminary matter for that, I'd like to talk about something weird the textbook does when they implement branch prediction. And just generally sort of general patterns for implementing branch prediction. So the natural thing you would probably think of doing to implement branch prediction is that you have this PC register. So let's put something where sometimes we, take the jump address, target, sometimes we take the address we got from later in the pipeline, which said, if we mispredicted, where do we go? That value we passed on to remember if we made a wrong guess. And sometimes we take an address from return, which got from the data memory. So this would be a natural thing to do, and this is a working, correct way to implement it, and it's not what our textbook does. So what our textbook does is our textbook, instead of having the value here, they put a register here, instead of putting the PC register here. Basically. They do something like that. So what they end up with is they compute what they call a predicted PC that replaces the PC. And later on in the beginning of the fetch stage, so this is the fetch, they fix that predicted PC based on mispredicted jumps or returns that you're stalling for. This is something that they've chosen to do. It's the same logic that you would do if you were computing it at the end of the previous cycle. They've just chosen to do part of it at the beginning of the fetch cycle. It does mean the inputs come from a slightly different place, like figuring out whether the jump is taken. You're not getting that from the execute stage. You're getting it from the memory stage, passed through a pipeline register, because you computed that in the last cycle. Now you're at the very beginning of the next cycle looking at whether you had a misprediction. So this is something that's confusing that our textbook does that I don't think they needed to do. I think the reason they did it is to emphasize that you're predicting the PC and then correcting that prediction. But you could have done this at the end of the cycle instead of the very beginning, and it would be the same. So questions about this? Okay, that's all I have for today.